Today on Maine Calling, the impact of Margaret Chase Smith. It's been 74 years since Margaret Chase Smith made her famous Declaration of Conscience speech, but its words still resonate for many people today. In fact, the story caught the attention of Tony Award-winning playwright Joe DiPietro. It inspired him to write the comic drama Conscience, based on Smith's role in the McCarthy hearings. The play has its main premiere later this month at Portland Stage Company. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we discuss the legacy of Senator Margaret Chase Smith and how that translates on stage. Are you old enough to remember her speech? Have you thought about Chase's words and what they might mean today? Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. To call Margaret Chase Smith a trailblazer is a bit of an understatement. Born in 1897, she served Maine in the U.S. House and Senate and ran for president. Today, we're going to learn about this political leader from Skowhegan who broke so many barriers, and we'll hear how her legacy inspired a new play opening soon at Portland Stage Company. My guests today are both with the Margaret Chase Smith Library. Chris O'Brien is the new director there, and Nicole Potter is curator of collections. Of course, we invite you to join the conversation. What we'd like to do, call us and let us know if you met Margaret Chase Smith, if you've studied her, if there's something about her that you want your daughters and granddaughters to know. You can call at 1-800-399-3566, send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, or post a comment on social media. Well, thank you all both for joining us today. Chris, I'm going to start with you. As I mentioned, Margaret Chase Smith, born in 1897, a pioneer. Give us some firsts. Start with a list. Give us the list of firsts that Margaret Chase Smith has on her resume.
Oh, she has a lengthy list of firsts. She was the first woman elected from Maine to the U.S. Congress. She ended up with a job when her husband passed away. He'd been elected to Congress, and she took over his seat through a special election and then won an election that fall. She served three terms. Is that right, Nick? Served as the United States Senator, first woman elected. She remains the longest serving Republican female senator to this day. The number of firsts beyond that is pretty incredible as well. But that's a good start.
That's a good start. Nicole, you know, Margaret Chase Smith is known best for her Declaration of Conscience speech, and we are going to talk about that in depth today. But I'm wondering if you want to reflect on how she came to be the kind of person who could stand up to such a fearsome and powerful man as Senator McCarthy.
Yeah, Margaret's life begins here in Skowhegan, and some could argue that she had humble beginnings. She graduates from high school in 1916, and she never goes to college, but she's an incredibly determined young woman. She teaches in a one-room schoolhouse. She's a reporter. She's one of the first members of the Business and Professional Women's Club here in Skowhegan. And she takes on a huge role as soon as her husband, Clyde, enters the house. She's his secretary. She works on his staff. And then as soon as she's elected in her own right, she immediately takes a role in the Armed Services Committee and builds a great reputation in Congress.
So probably not what would be expected from a nice young woman from Maine to be on the Armed Services Committee.
No, I think everyone was surprised by her record in the Armed Services Committee and being a woman, and she was touring different bases on the West Coast. She was very involved at that time.
All right. So tell us about being a U.S. Senator, Nicole. She is elected to the U.S. Senate in 1948. And one thing that, you know, I've thought about Margaret Chase Smith's story many times in the past, but what I guess I never thought about until this morning was the fact that she had not even been in the Senate for 2 years when she stood up to Joe McCarthy. So for those who are listening who are new to Maine or young enough that they don't know this story, tell us the story of the Declaration of Conscience speech.
Yes, as you said, Jennifer, she's elected in 1948, and she was a surprise candidate. She shocks Maine when in the primary, she wins 52% of the vote, and it was a four-candidate race, so she's winning a huge percentage of the vote there. And she's also unexpected by the Senate. When she's elected, her Senate certificate reads, Margaret Chase Smith of Maine, who being duly elected by the people of his state. So they're not even reflecting her pronouns there. So they weren't expecting her from day one. But she's in office for 2 years, and then she decides to stand up on the Senate floor to Senator Joe McCarthy. She was upset by what she referred to as this communist witch hunt. And she decided to take a stand, and she wrote this speech in part with her chief of staff, William Bill Lewis, who she had a longtime partnership with. But even though Lewis helped her write the speech, even he didn't know that she was going to take that stand on June 1st. That was the decision she made day of.
Chris, put it in some perspective. How much courage did it take to stand up to Joe McCarthy? Take us back to that time, to 1950. What it was like in the country and what it was like on Capitol Hill.
So it's an excellent question that leads to a really difficult time in the United States. McCarthy has made a name for himself by joining an anti-communist crusade. It's already well underway by the time he becomes famous. And in some ways, Margaret Chase Smith bought into some of the anti-communist movement ahead of time. She remained firmly anti-communist throughout her life. When McCarthy stepped up, he was still a bit suspect by many members of the Senate. He was looking for an issue. He found this, and he caught a great deal of media attention and a great deal of support from around the country. What she asked for, along with other senators, what she asked for was some evidence that what he was claiming was true. It's perfectly possible that she thought he might be able to produce it. 205 members of the influencing policy in the State Department. She asked for the names, as others had, but she was the person who went to the Senate floor to denounce what he was doing, and she was first to do that. So there's incredible bravery to be the person who actually steps up on the floor, gives the speech. She doesn't mention him by name, but everybody knows who we're talking about at that moment. Then to be the lone woman in the Senate, taking on the man perceived as one of the most powerful rabble rousers, at least, but maybe one of the more powerful senators at that moment, takes incredible courage. It was an amazing thing to do. And she recognized throughout her life that this is what she would be remembered for, that this is the moment that people would hearken back to. And she recognized that proudly, as she should have.
Yeah. Is this a case, Nicole, in which there are others in her party, in the Republican Party, who felt as she did but didn't have the courage to stand up?
Yes. There's definitely historical evidence that other people felt this way against Senator Joe McCarthy, but none of them found the courage that she did that day. And you see throughout her career, both before and after her Declaration of Conscience, that Margaret Chase Smith was a woman whose actions were dictated by her morals, which she believed was right and wrong. And that was certainly shown on June 1st, 1950.
Well, calling in now, Sue Longley, calling in from Liberty. Hi, Sue, and thanks for calling in. I understand that you knew Margaret Chase Smith.
I did. I was. We had the same birthdays, and we got to celebrate them together. And went in her later years. I was at the University of Maine in a Master's of History program, and I knew she was an hour or less away. So I knocked on her door, and she was always interested in education, and she welcomed me, and that began a nice friendship.
Oh, that's wonderful. But, what do you want people to know about Margaret Chase Smith that perhaps they don't know?
Well, your folks are saying what she often recounted, and I would add that word must have gotten out around the Senate that she was organizing it. I think maybe her long drives to Maine into the middle of the night had her, you know, getting deep into her what it is she really believed. She came back. Word had traveled, I think, or seemingly, that she was going to make a speech. And she ran into Senator McCarthy, and he said, "I hear you're going to make a speech today." And she said, "Yes, I am, and I don't think you're going to like it." And anyway, what I'd like to do is I heard you say that what a nice young girl from her being. How can she be so brave? And after she died, I was in the state Senate and I spent the night writing her eulogy to deliver. And I got three excerpts that speak to this nice young girl and her adventurousness and her bravery. So I'll be quick. But one evening she was racing to Lewiston to give a speech. And she managed to hit the side rail on the right hand of the drive. Next, she over-swerved away in such a way that she hit the other side rail. So she, you can imagine her driving frantically, trying to make one of her constituents visit. So she could have arguably a wild driver, sometimes anyway, to honor her really strong sense of constituent service. Another time, she was campaigning in a general store along the Maine-New Hampshire border, making sure to meet everybody and listening carefully and spending a lot of time. Anyway, she was coming out of the store, and one fellow kindly informed her that she could do much better if she crossed back over the border because she wouldn't be finding many voters in New Hampshire. And another time, lastly, the last example is there was a time in her later years when she had gotten sick on an airplane and everyone was flooding her with letters and she had it. She wasn't, you know, she didn't want to be treated like somebody sick in bed. She wanted to be treated like she was still alive and well. So she, being the photographic how to get photo ops, a genius in that area, she called one of her friends with a skidoo. And on the coldest day possible, I think it was 20 below, she organized to have a photographer come and take pictures of her out on a skidoo in freezing weather. And she said, "That is what helped me not have to endure so many get well notes." Anyway,
so people wanted to be kind, but she didn't want anything to do with that. Sue, I want to ask you, because you were nice enough to call in today, you served in the Maine, in the Senate in Maine, as you think about your friend Margaret Chase Smith and you see what's happening in our country today and we're in election season, what do you think she would be saying today?
I think she would be cool, calm, and collected. I think she would be in her quiet way. She would think deeply before she even spoke. And then when she spoke, within a few words, she could convey that in our country, we have a strong sense of civility, of respect, of standing up for what you believe, and this was a real key word for her, key phrase, disagree agreeably. That's the key to our success. If we can learn discourse, that if we disagree, we can disagree agreeably. So I think maybe disagree agreeably would be the two words that would capture what she would be trying to convey without saying more.
Thank you so much for calling in. Sue Longley called in from Liberty, and Sue is a friend of Margaret Chase Smith's. We'd love to have you call in if you knew Margaret Chase Smith or know a great story about her, or just want to talk about how you think about her Declaration of Conscience speech today, 74 years after she made that speech. Nicole, as you hear what Sue said about her personality, does this meld with what you're hearing from other people as you do the research there at the library?
Very much so. Sue's remembrance of Margaret of being a brave woman, a woman who spoke her mind, a woman who didn't always want attention, even though she wanted her words to have an impact, definitely speak of that. She was a dear friend to many here in the state of Maine, and we hear from a lot of people who have fond remembrances of her. So it's great to hear from Sue. And I will say the anecdote that she shared about McCarthy asking Margaret if she's going to make a speech on the floor. We only have anecdotal evidence of that, but I know that anecdote made its way into Conscience. So if you go to see that at the Portland stage, you'll see that bit on the tram in DC acted out.
All right, Chris O'Brien, you're a historian. How does today's moment compare to 1950?
Oh, I get the advantage of being a historian and saying we mostly look backwards. So the, I think that Sue and Nicole are onto something important here about the idea about civility and the senator's commitment to civility. So one of the things that happened, I'll give you a little quick sideline. We're approaching the 70th year of President Eisenhower coming to visit Maine. There was a lobster bake and a steak bake in the yard here at her home. And a mini golf course that they set up to lean into Eisenhower's great loves. He did not speak out against Joe McCarthy. He remained quiet. So she had some problems with Eisenhower. But they tended to be quiet problems. They tended to be things that she would talk about. I've been to the Eisenhower Library and seen the correspondence from the other side. They weren't always as nice to her in their private conversations as she remained to them. So looking at this moment, remembering that call to civility, remembering that call to listen to others before we speak, I think that's an incredibly important lesson and one that's timeless. So may not just be today, but it certainly would be useful today as well.
All right. Well, we invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org or post a comment to social media. This is Maine Calling, and we are talking about Margaret Chase Smith. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking about one of the most influential leaders to come from Maine, Margaret Chase Smith, the first woman to serve in both the U.S. House and Senate, famous for her speech against McCarthyism. Joining me today, Nicole Potter and Chris O'Brien from the Margaret Chase Smith Library and Museum in Skowhegan. Nicole is curator of collections and Chris is the director. He used to be a history professor at UMaine Farmington. You can join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send us an email, talk@mainepublic.org, or comment on Facebook or Instagram. Calling in now, Lisa DeFranza, who is director of the play Conscience, which opens very soon at Portland Stage Company. Thanks so much for calling in, Lisa.
You're welcome. Thanks for hosting such a great discussion.
So one thing that's interesting to me, Lisa, is that the play Conscience was written by a playwright who is not from Maine, and it was very recently written. And so I'm wondering what you see as the enduring appeal. Why did a contemporary playwright write a play about Margaret Chase Smith?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Joe Pietro wrote the play in 2019, and he himself had just learned about Margaret Chase Smith and her Declaration of Conscience. And he, when he read something about the whole thing, he took a deep dive into the research about it, and it really sparked his interest. And I think the play is fascinating because it's not just a historical drama. It's certainly not a docudrama. It's really looking at history through the lens of now. And all of our work on the play has been this delicate dance of, yes, we're dealing with four historical people, but we're also dealing with the characters that Joe Pietro created in 2019. And we're also doing that in the election season of 2024. So all of that is sort of part of the experience of coming to see Conscience at Portland Stage.
So I understand this is a comic drama. How is this funny?
Well, you know, it's a very human story. There are four characters, Margaret Chase Smith and Bill Lewis and Joe McCarthy and his secretary who became his wife, Jean Kerr. And anytime you have a political drama that is with four people, there are going to be deep personal interactions. And all of the four characters interact with each other in ways that are quite serious and ways that are even quite disturbing and jarring. But also, there's so much humor between them. And that's part of the enjoyment of the evening of theater. And even though I think sometimes people can get a little politicked out in election season, I think it's super refreshing as a play just to really look into this window of history where someone stood up and said something that spoke truth to power and even, you know, ran the risk of breaking ranks of her party to do that.
Yeah. So, Lisa, I'm just going to quickly say Bill Lewis is who Nicole mentioned earlier, her top aide at
yes.
the time. So I just want to ask you one final question, and that is, what impact do you hope that Conscience will have on theatergoers?
You know, I always think that question's funny because I hope that I will learn what impact it has. I think for me, the play has great impact, and I hope people will find it enjoyable and get inside of it enough to realize, oh, we've come so far, we haven't come far, but guess what? There are always people who will have the courage to speak out. It's a hopeful play in that way.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Lisa DeFranza, directing the play Conscience, which opens at Portland Stage September 25th. On the line now is Anita Stewart, who is the artistic director for Portland Stage. Thanks so much for calling in, Anita. You chose this play. Why did you choose it?
Well, I read it back in 2019 when it first was developed, and I learned so much about Margaret Chase Smith that I never knew. Having two children who had gone through Portland Public School District, I knew her name, but it humanized her and brought her to life, and I knew that this would be a great production for our community.
All right. This has been staged before in a couple other places. I'm wondering what you learned about how audience responded there and how you think that might be different here in Maine.
Well, what's so interesting about that, Jennifer, is that this was happening back in 2019. So it ran at the George Street Playhouse for 8 performances, and it closed down during COVID. And it was scheduled to go to numerous other theaters after that, but that all fell apart as we all hunkered down and spent the next couple of years sort of isolating and not doing much. So this is the first full out production that this play will have. And what's been great is the playwright, Joe M.D. Pietro, has been very generous with us at looking at the play and speaking with Lisa and actually has tailored some of the language in it that we felt could use a little bit of work. And it's been great getting to work with a really top-notch playwright and just refine the play for our audiences.
Sure. Tony Award-winning playwright. Anita, thank you so much for calling in. Anita Stewart, Portland Stage's artistic director. We're going to go now to Rolf, who's calling from Topsom. Hi, Rolf. Go ahead.
Hello. I just thought I'd call in and let you know what a lovely lady she was, aside from being a politician. And a friend of mine was making documentary films. He came from California, and I used to drive him around about everywhere he wanted to go here in Maine when he came up this way. And we were coming back from the Bingham Air Show one afternoon. And he said, you know, he said, I'd like to get an interview with Margaret Chase Smith. But he says, I can't seem to contact her to make an appointment. And I said, Richard, you don't need an appointment. And we just stopped in front of her house. And I went over and knocked on the door. And she came to the door. And I said, this is Richard Kane, and he'd like to interview you. And she said, oh, great. She said, I'm busy this afternoon, but why don't you come back tomorrow? And we came back the next day, and he spent the whole afternoon with her. And she was just so gracious and so such a lovely lady to just sit and talk with.
Let me ask you what I've asked our other caller, Sue Longley. Rolf, when you think about what's going on in politics today, do you think about Margaret J. Smith?
No, not much, because the whole politics has changed so much.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story about the interview and knowing Margaret Chase Smith. We'll go to Frederick, who's calling from Bath. Hi, Frederick. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning, Jennifer and guests. You know, we hear people who knew Margaret Chase Smith, and it's an oddity to recall the person that was behind the McCarthy hearings, who was the architect of the McCarthy hearings, actually, was a Jewish gentleman from New York named Roy Cohn. And then we go forward one generation later into the 1970s, and who does Roy Cohn take under his wing as a mentor to him but Donald Trump? And Roy Cohn had a philosophy to always be on the attack, to never admit an error. And it's chilling to remember that this is so near. 1950 is 70 years ago, but look at how close we are linked to this philosophy of outing the other, of making the other, particularly in Ohio now. And I'd like to hear the commentator's thoughts about Roy Cohn and his influence now.
Chris, I'll start with you.
Roy Cohn is one of those really fascinating characters, how he exercised power for as long as he did. But the caller is exactly right. The idea of being perpetually on the attack was his signature trademark. He took a lot of people under his wing later. He was a lawyer, of course. He took on new clients, the former president among them. But his influence on McCarthy might have been that he found someone of similar beliefs, that they worked well together. I don't know if that's as true for others who followed along with him later, but he was effective at what he did. And so he remained one of those people, often in the background, but often with a great deal of influence and power. He is a complicated person in his own right. And so an interesting person to think about. He was orchestrating McCarthy's hearings on behalf of McCarthy, right? Not the later hearings where McCarthy fell apart, but the ones where McCarthy was holding the hearings, investigating people.
Nicole, you know Margaret Chase Smith's letters well, or in writings well. Is there anything about Roy Cohn that you've come across?
I've certainly come across his name, but Margaret was very careful about what she put in writing, and also a very fair person, as Chris said earlier. So that's one thing I would encourage, if you want to learn more about his role and Margaret's interactions with him, to reach out to the library. We facilitate a lot of research inquiries, and you can find information about how to do research at the Margaret Chase Smith Library on our website, mcslibrary.org.
Frederick, thanks for your call. Let me follow up on that, Nicole. What kind of interesting research has happened maybe in your time there? Have you had some good stories to tell, what somebody was looking into that you maybe wouldn't expect, or some connection that you found because of a researcher's work?
Yeah, we get a lot of research requests here at the Margaret Chase Smith Library, and we just had a huge resurgence this summer with Kamala Harris announcing her candidacy People are always interested when there's another female candidate for president. What was Margaret's candidacy? What did that look like? We want to know details of her campaign. One thing that I've found interesting since I started at the library, one of my earliest research requests was on Margaret's debate with Eleanor Roosevelt. This was in 1956, and it was on Face the Nation. And they were each representing a presidential nominee. So they are each representing a candidate. And this is considered the first presidential debate. It's the first debate we see on television. And before this debate, this was not a common occurrence. Why would we have politicians debate each other if it's not going to be seen or broadcast? So I've always found that very interesting.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, and whenever I get to look into Margaret's involvement with early space exploration, she was a huge proponent of NASA. James Webb once said, we could have never landed a man on the moon without one woman, Margaret Chase Smith. So she was very involved in the Aeronautics and Space Sciences Committee for almost 15 years. And whenever we get research inquiries on that, I really enjoy it.
Oh, that's so interesting. She'd be so proud that there's a female astronaut from Maine, I'm sure, Jessica Meir. Yeah, so I'm going to read here, let's see, an email we have from Bonnie. My only Margaret Chase Smith story is sometime in the late 80s or early 90s. My husband and I went to the Arby's in Topsom, and there, at a table, was sitting Mrs. Smith. There was someone else with her. We did not disturb them, but we will never forget seeing her. It just felt so beneath her dignity and stature to see her in Arby's. Judging from her birth date, she must have been quite old. Nicole, are you surprised, or is that the kind of thing she liked to do?
That's the kind of thing she liked to do. She, you know, she retires back to Maine, and she always acknowledged that she was a public figure and that she was a politician, and she was available in that role. But she was also a woman from Maine. She was proud to be from here, and she was often out in the world living her life, going to Arby's. She frequented local restaurants here in Skowhegan. She was very available to people.
I want to follow up on something you said earlier. You're talking about how researchers now are looking for parallels between Kamala Harris's, Vice President Kamala Harris's run and Margaret Chase Smith's run. One thing that's been reported a lot in the media is how Vice President Harris is talking differently about her potential status as the first woman, the first Black woman, the first woman of color to be president than Hillary Clinton did, and that she's really not talking about it. And I'm wondering if you go back, did Margaret Chase Smith talk about herself as a pioneer, or was she following the same kind of example that Kamala Harris did, where she didn't want to talk about that and said, look, I'm the best person for the job?
She believed in running on her own merit, but when she announced her candidacy, she announced it at the Women's National Press Club in January of 1964. And she lists all of these reasons people say that she shouldn't be a candidate for president. And one is her gender, that she shouldn't be running for president because she is a woman. So she does acknowledge that in her nomination speech when she's announcing. But the three tenets that she ran on had nothing to do with being the first woman. She said that she would have no formal national organizations. She would have no large war chest of funds. She, indeed, when she was sent money from supporters, she would mail the money back to them. She wasn't taking donations for her campaign. And she would not do any extended time of the campaign trail. She still believed that she was a senator first and foremost, and she would be in D.C. to vote and then campaign when she could fit that in amongst her senatorial duties.
Oh, wow. Kristen, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about that, about how, as we reflect now, as a woman is running for president, Margaret Chase Smith ran for president, how 75 years later, women are framing themselves for the highest office compared to how Margaret Chase Smith did.
So I think that the question of first is an interesting question. She certainly was first in many ways, but she also said repeatedly that what she was doing was representing the people of Maine, all of them, male and female. So while she was frequently acknowledged as being the first, and she had occasion to say, I want to be understood as someone who is doing the job as a politician, who is representing the people who have voted for me. And I think that one of the things that has happened is 75 years have expired since the Declaration of Conscience speech, 1964 for her nomination. We still haven't had a woman president, which is somewhat astonishing given much of the rest of the world where women have been in leadership positions for much longer. So a historic first that is a long time coming. She may not have adopted that language very often on her own, but it certainly today seems that it's been a long time since 1964, 60 years, I'm pretty sure. So of course people should talk differently about it, but they should remember how long this has been in coming.
Well, we're talking about U.S. Senator Margaret Chase Smith from Maine. A new Portland Stage Company play called Conscience will be out in just a couple weeks, and it reflects upon her famous Declaration of Conscience speech during the McCarthy hearings. What are your memories of Margaret Chase Smith? What do you think about her as you reflect on politics today? Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send a quick email, talk@mainepublic.org, or find us on social media. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Joining me today, Chris O'Brien and Nicole Potter with the Margaret Chase Smith Library and Museum. We are discussing Senator Margaret Chase Smith as Portland Stage Company prepares to stage a play about her Declaration of Conscience speech. Share your questions or comments. Email talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Frank calling from Southwest Harbor. Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I'm loving your conversation. When Margaret Chase Smith gave her Declaration of Conscience speech in June of 1950, I was a little six-year-old living with my parents. My stepfather was career Air Force. We were at Grenier Field in Manchester, New Hampshire. The next year, we transferred to Loring Air Force Base in Bangor, spent a couple of years there, and every time he talked about politicians, he would bring up how wonderful Margaret Chase Smith was, that she spoke against the lies of Joe McCarthy. McCarthy, in a way, sounds like Trump does today, just lie, lie, lie. But my stepfather was so proud of her. He was a Mainer. We transferred to living in Alaska at the Air Force Base there in Elmendorf in 1953. And when Margaret Chase Smith was on the radio, the whole house would have to listen, even though we were 5,000 miles away. Margaret Chase Smith was the one politician I remember, other than Eisenhower, as a child, that dominated conversation in our house. And she was a terrific woman. After she left the Senate, she lived in Maine for, what, another 22 years after she left the Senate, and just a wonderful person. Great example of a woman leader. And I hope we're able to do the same thing in the fall with Kamala.
Frank, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your family story. We'll go to Harpswell and Dave. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hi there. Back in 1958, I was 8 years old. Margaret had a lot to do with getting a cedar to commemorate Alaska joining the Union, getting a cedar tree from Alaska and planting it in our town center. And all of us kids got together, and she arranged to have a little sack of dirt from every state. And so we managed to round up 50 kids, and we were able to line up and dump the soil in the hole. And shortly before her death, she came to Harpswell. She had a summer place here, by the way. She was quite well known and loved here. But she came back here and looked at the cedar tree, and I had the great honor of walking her around the center on my arm. And then we interviewed her for the local community TV station. And it was just fun. I mean, I've heard of her and loved her my entire life.
Dave, let me ask you, you're calling from Harpswell. Is that cedar tree still there? Is it alive?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. It sure is. Yeah. Yeah. She was able to see it. She never actually saw the tree originally, but she came back shortly before her death and She was quite frail, but she took my arm and we walked around the town common and met a lot of people that were there to greet her.
If someone goes to Harpswell, is there a plaque? Do they know which tree it is? Can you, is it easy to find? Give us directions.
It's right near the old meeting house across from the Kellogg Church. There's a cedar tree there that's, it's not huge, but I don't think they grow large, but it's still alive and still looking great. And there is a plaque there.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for calling and sharing that. I really appreciate Dave calling from Harpswell. Nicole, are you surprised to hear the story that Dave just shared?
I'm not, but I've never heard it before. So I'm going to have to do some research of my own when we get off this call. But Margaret loved Harpswell. She had a house there. It was in Cundy's Harbor. And her executive assistant and dear friend, Bill Lewis, had a house there as well. And they really enjoyed spending time in that part of the state.
An email here from Lisa. When my brother and I were children, we sent a letter to Senator Smith in 1964, informing her of the great honor of naming our new puppy after her, since we received the puppy on the day she was placed in nomination for the presidency at the Republican convention that year, with a P.S. that our dog Maggie would be a Democrat. Senator Smith graciously and kindly responded that she was indeed honored and that she did not mind Maggie's party affiliation at all. And an email from Belinda. What I remember about her as I was young and not yet political is that she was so loved and admired by the Democratic women of my family. So this is interesting that, we're hearing from two Democrats who admired Margaret Chase Smith. Chris, is that because the times were different or because Margaret Chase Smith was different?
Oh, I think the answer is probably both of those things. I think the parties have changed, but she was glad to buck her party on a number of issues. She was incredibly bipartisan in some matters. I think the what she was in many ways was a New England Republican for all that meant during her long career. And that in some ways the transformation of the parties that began near the end of her career made some of those things more difficult. But she remained friends with all sorts of people. We have incredible correspondence here at the Margaret Chase Smith Library, with a variety of folks who wrote in, to congratulate her for when she won awards or to ask for favors. It's not clear who's a Democrat and who's a Republican unless they say so. And she responds graciously to everyone. And did the same on the floor of the Senate and the floor of the House. So I think that it's that piece of her that makes her important to folks, not just in Maine, but nationwide and beyond.
Did people cross party lines to vote for her?
They just given the breakdown of the voter base in Maine, they certainly had to. She was winning elections with 60% or more of the vote. So, yes.
Nicole, you wanted to jump in there?
I was going to say the same as Chris.
Okay, great. Nicole, let me ask you more about the library and the collections there and how people can visit. You mentioned before that many researchers apply to work on projects there. But what about the rest of us? Is it open to the public? And what will we see if we go?
Yes, we're open to the public Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're a small staff here, so we encourage you to make a reservation. You can find our contact information on our website, mcslibrary.org. So just shoot us an email or give us a call if you would like to come by. A visit at our library usually entails a tour of Margaret's home that she built here in Skowhegan. She built it for herself. We know she was building it in the late 1940s, and she spent her first Christmas here in 1949. And this would have been the home that our earlier caller, Ralph, where he would have knocked on the door to meet Margaret Chase Smith, her red Dutch doors that she has here on the home. And the library is then built around it in 1982. And she's a living part of the library for 13 years. So you can do a tour of her house. You can look at our museum exhibitions. We have permanent exhibits and temporary. We currently have a portrait exhibit. which is all portraits of Maine female politicians, which were painted by an artist named Jerry Whitman. And that's on display here through the end of November. And you can do research, even if you're not a formal researcher or affiliated with an academic institution. If you have a question about Margaret, or if your family had correspondence with her at any point, you can reach out and we can get you a copy of that and help answer any questions you have.
Okay, Nicole, I'm looking at you. You look young. Did you have the benefit of meeting Margaret Chase Smith or not?
I did not meet Margaret. No, she passed away when I was quite young, and I'm not originally from Maine. I grew up in New York State, but I do remember my first connection to her was going to Seneca Falls, and she's on display in the Women's Hall of Fame there. And that was my first introduction to her.
All right. And Chris, what about you? Did you get to meet her?
I wasn't in Maine yet when she passed. So I am definitely old enough to have met her, but I didn't have the opportunity to do so.
Okay. And I'm wondering, you know, I know that you taught history at UMaine Farmington, and so a lot of students who grew up in Maine came through your classes. What does Margaret Chase Smith mean to them? Is she somebody who comes up in conversation anymore, or do you think that maybe this play will bring her name back into conversation?
I think that her name remains in conversation here in Maine. And part of the way that I got here is that I'm a Cold War historian. And so she weaves in and out of the story of the Cold War, not just in Maine, but elsewhere. And so we had students who wrote senior theses on Margaret Chase Smith. She came up frequently in courses where folks might not expect her to be, definitely the Declaration of Conscience speech, but elsewhere as well, as Nicole was talking about, her role in the space race, her role in the Armed Services Committee, the Naval Affairs Committee. She was this incredibly important person in a variety of ways for a very long time throughout much of the history of the Cold War. And so, yes, she remains a subject of great deal of interest for students. We also have, through the Maine, our affiliate, the Maine Margaret Chase Smith Policy Center at the University of Maine, holds policy meetings and training for young women who are interested in politics. And it is named after her for good reason. So she is very much alive in the minds of students, I believe.
Okay,
the play's going to help that even more.
We just have a couple of minutes left, but now you've really piqued my curiosity. You're a Cold War historian. Talk about how did Margaret Chase Smith feel during the Cold War? Was she a real Cold Warrior? Was she a real hawk? Or is that too simplistic?
She is a reliable vote for military buildup. In the wake of the Cuban Missile Crisis, suggested maybe we should use our nuclear weapons on Russia. She's that much of a hawk. She doesn't always stay in that spot. She's a proponent of carrying out to victory in Vietnam. And a story that needs probably to be researched even further is her role, but very much a reliable vote for a strong U.S. military throughout her whole career. The Margaret Smith Cold Warrior is very much a reality of her career. So she stood up against Joe McCarthy for good reason, but she was profoundly anti-communist throughout her time as a representative of Maine, as a senator in the United States.
And Nicole, this is so interesting what Chris is saying, and I'm wondering if there's anything else that you think is maybe, if not misunderstood, maybe not talked about enough about Margaret Chase Smith and who she was and what she believed. Is there any other really strong part of her belief system as a politician? I'm thinking because she gets so much attention for the Declaration of Conscience speech, if not for that, what would people be talking about?
I guess I think back to other firsts of Margaret or other major successes. You know, while she's still in the House, she advocates for and succeeds in getting women permanent status in the military. That's reflecting back on this career of being pro-military that Chris was mentioning. She was the first and still the only woman to serve as the chair of the Senate Republican Conference. And in more minor terms, she was the first woman to break the sound barrier. You know, there's all these other achievements that could be highlighted. Not that the Declaration shouldn't be raised up, but there's a lot to talk about when it comes to her.
Well, I really appreciate both of you joining us for the hour. The voice you just heard, Nicole Potter, curator of collections at the Margaret Chase Smith Library and Museum, and Chris O'Brien is director of the Margaret Chase Smith Library and Museum. And as Nicole mentioned, open 10 to 4 every day, but call first, make an appointment or a reservation. Today's sound engineer, Sam Tracy, main calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. You can visit our website to sign up for our weekly newsletter or to listen to past programs, years of past programs there at maincalling.org. Also, you can use the Maine Public Vox Pop app to send us voicemails that we might be able to play on the air. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.